This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 221, brought to you by C2E2, Emerald City Comic Con, and Discount Comic Book Service, and of course, iFanboy members like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 221. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Well, hello.
That's a new one.
Connor,
ball's in your court. And over here, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi.
Oh, timid Connor.
Okay. All right. iFanboy, we like comics. We read them. Every week we read a bunch of them, and one of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website, talk about it on this here podcast, along with lots of other topics of interest. Mouth was getting all spitty. I had to stop that. Stay tuned to the end of the show. We're going to announce more giveaways. I don't know if you noticed, that's becoming a regular thing. Yes. Before we get going, little reminder, it's a spoiler-laden program. So we're going to talk about the books that came out this week and the stuff that happened to them. So if you haven't read them yet, then back away, sir. And then come back later after you
step
back
off
for the podcast.
Step off.
Because I don't want to hear that I ruined the book for you. I don't want that. These guys don't want that.
We haven't gotten that complaint in a long time.
We really haven't.
Ever since we put the warning in.
It's been like 4 years.
Yeah, which really puts life in perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Remember when that was our biggest problem?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, Connor, you had the pick of the week this week. Nice light week.
Yeah, this is a great week. I love this week.
It wasn't too bad. This was actually – Wednesday was a great day for little inner child Connor.
Apparently.
Because it snowed like 12 inches. I got to run around in the snow.
Big old Connor just
throwing snowballs at people and just,
just doing a face plant in a bank.
Like Will Ferrell and Elf.
Popping kids in the face with snowballs. those punk kids live my block. And I got a bunch of great comics. And the pick of the week was Amazing Spider-Man 620. I think it was the snow. It was the atmosphere. I just felt very like childlike and reading the books on my couch and, you know, with like a hot chocolate and
woody pajamas,
snow on the ground. And Spider-Man is, you know, he's, when I think about it, he's as important as any superhero is to me, because as a kid, Spider-Man was all around.
Yep.
Like Christmas.
I was just, that's all I heard. Spider-Man is,
you know,
all around.
Spider-Man, the Spider-Man is Amazing Friends cartoon. Also, the Spider-Man cartoon from the 1960s, which they replay on TV in New York. You know, everyone watched that, and Spider-Man was as important as any other superhero, you know, including my favorite Batman. Spider-Man was always important. So when Spider-Man comics are good, I'm happy. I wrote my review that Spider-Man comics need to be good.
And that's totally true. There is a direct correlation to growing up in our generation. When Spider-Man comics are good, life is good.
Well, let me ask you two something. Is Spider-Man more important to you because he's so associated with this city?
I think that's a part of it.
It's a part of it, but really it's the fact that as a kid, you know, I could say every day of the week I watch a Spider-Man cartoon. I watched that 1960s version in the morning. You know, Spider-Man does whatever Spider can, that one. And then the Amazing Spider-Man is Amazing Friends every Saturday. And that was,
man, I saw the same rerun of that damn show every week, and it was on really early. So I remember having to get up at like 7, and it was always that one where the dude turned him into like a half man, half spider, and I friggin' hated that episode.
Oh, I always saw the 10 Little Indians one with the Avengers.
I never saw that
one. When they went to some house and they started disappearing, and it was Captain America and Spider-Man. But so anyway, the point is, when Spider-Man is good, I'm happy, and I think Spider-Man being good is good for the industry. I think when Spider-Man comics are bad, that's a bad sign. Sales aside, I think Spider-Man is the flagship character at Marvel. Marvel is the biggest American comic book company. Spider-Man should be good, and I think Spider-Man is good right now. And I loved 620. 620 was the final issue of the a Mysterio arc, and this was just packed. It was one of those comics where, you know, you read a comic sometimes and you feel like you're done with it in 5 minutes and you just wonder where it went. This one, it felt like every page was bursting. There was some 8-panel pages, but it never felt overwhelming. There's a lot of dialogue, but it never felt overwhelming. A lot of that had to do with the great layouts from Marcos Martin and Javier Pulido, who split the book. They had some really fun, innovative layouts, which is something we've come to expect from Marcos Martin in the past, but, you know, like big sound effects and Spider-Man crossing over multiple panels. I liked one page where there was like a backward upside down L-shaped panel, and Spider-Man was arced into both of them.
The panels were amazing. There's the panel where Carly walks away towards the end, and they just broke a little panel around her, even though it was the same scene.
Oh, I just felt like the combination of the art, the layouts, the sound effects. I love this, you know, the lettering. I don't often notice lettering, but in this one, like when Spider-Man shows up in the barge and there's the big Spider-Man in the dialogue balloon, like that stuff to me feels like Spider-Man comics. And this was one of those things that it just feels like we say all the time how then the brand new day is sort of recapturing what Spider-Man comics should be. And this was almost the perfect template for it. He's up against too many enemies to handle. He's in over his head. He finds a way. He uses his brain. He uses his strength. He outsmarts the enemy, even though the enemy thinks he's outsmarted him. And then at the end of the day, he's soaking wet from falling in the river, and he's drinking a cup of coffee, and he's got his mask rolled up. And that's, to me, the entire arc of this issue was sort of quintessential Spider-Man. And to me, and it made me so happy to read that, you know, on the couch as the snow was coming down, and I'd been running around in the snow, and it just felt like it felt right. You know, this was a very emotional pick, and not that it made me emotional, but it wasn't like the story was better than the other stories, or the art was better, although I thought the art was fantastic. It's just that I felt really good when I finished it.
It was a gut pick.
Yes.
Which is fine. And it's a valid because, I mean, and what's interesting about the art is that the art chores were shared by both Marcos Martin and Javier Pulido. And I barely noticed.
Well, they have a very similar style. I think the style is perfect for Spider-Man.
I mean, there's a way to put multiple artists on a book and make it work. And you got to find them with complementary styles. And personally, I think unless you're doing like flashbacks where, okay, this artist is this time period and this artist is this time period. But for this, it like their styles were so similar and they probably were cheating towards each other to make that flow go so much better. And that's just a great decision. You know, yep.
I was looking for a break, like a place where I could tell the difference and I could not.
Yeah, totally.
I think this retro-y style is great for Spider-Man. I like all kinds of different artists. I liked when modern guys have done Spider-Man. I like McFarlane and I like, you know, all kinds of things. But I think for me, I think this is the best way to draw Spider-Man. It recalls Ditko. It recalls, you know, Romita. It recalls, you know, but it's also very modern in the layouts and how the story's told. It's just, I just love this style for Spider-Man.
It's respectful of the past while being, you know, while blazing the future. And I got to admit that specifically within the story, this was kind of, you know, Spider-Man's face-off against Mysterio, the villain. Mysterio is my favorite Spider-Man villain, hands down, I think. I've never read a Mysterio story I haven't liked. So I was glad.
I liked him a lot in this issue, too. He was great because he's a performer. He's not a guy down on his luck trying to rob a bank for money. He's not driven by revenge. He's not psychopath. Well, probably he's a psychopath, but he's not like, you know, the typical psychopath. He's got a flair for the dramatic. It's fun to watch him. You know, he's really not really committing a crime as so much as he's directing a play.
Yep.
And I think that's interesting to watch.
Yeah, it was really cool. And there were other great art moments, like you mentioned the L-shaped panel, which was awesome. But then there was a couple of shots where they did the where you could see through the mask to see Peter's face.
Yes, I like that a lot. I mentioned that in my review. I like that. You know, some artists will make the eyes big or small when he's squinting. Like they'll play with the reality of the mask. Whereas these two artists are very much the mask is real. It's not like he can move it. So in this instance, how do we get to see his expression? Well, they turn his mask translucent in a bit of some of the scenes, which I like.
When he comes out of the water, his brow looks furrowed a bit.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Marcos Martin. Oh no, Javier Pulido. If you sell your art, I will buy that page with the L shaped panel. I'm looking at that page. That one square panel with Carly on the phone. Like it's like pop art. It's amazing. It's like so good. That was the only thing that bugged me was that. So the big kind of, you know, the question is that whether or not Carly's father was dead or was one of Mysterio's kind of goons. And at the end, she gets the text message supposedly from him where it says "Ready to go? Where are you?" in text speak.
Yeah,
I don't think a dad isn't writing. In text
I think
speak.
That's a dead, more a dead
police. Yeah. My mom writes like that.
Does she?
Yeah, wow. It's awful.
I think maybe the parents go too far thinking they're doing it right.
Yeah, but
maybe.
He's like a dead police guy who's supposed to be real hard bitten that he's using text at all.
Maybe it wasn't him. So
I will say that, you know, like I like this issue a lot, but at the same time, I totally lost track of the story a couple of issues ago. Like I enjoyed reading the moments. I liked the Mysterio sort of character stuff when he was talking about his death scene and everything. But as far as the who's and where's and what's of the dead father and the
there's a lot of characters and a lot of people come back from the dead who were not really dead and that was a bit confusing. But I thought that hurt for me. It hurt the story more in the other chapters, whereas this one is sort of just a big battle.
Yeah. But
I like the overall arc of this gauntlet thing where so cliche to say redefining, but they're redefining all the classic villains who are my favorite. I like the old school Spider. I'm a Sam Raimiist. I like Electro, I like Sandman, I like Mysterio, not so much Venom, not so much the newer villains, but I like that they're redefining them and I want to see them all come together, which is what's going to happen at the end, and that'll be fun.
Yeah. Spider-Man, I've gone on record many a time saying ever since Brand New Day, Spider-Man's been awesome, and it just continues, and it's just, I'm amazed that a nearly weekly book has been this good for so consistent.
Quesada might have had a point.
No, because because here's the thing, and this is a little bit of a getting off topic. But if you had taken Steve Wacker as an editor and this brain trust of writers and this rotating artist and gave them Spider-Man before Brand New Day, I still would have been good. I still would have read that. I think the fact that you took Mary Jane out of the equation didn't give them, oh, now you can do great Spider-Man stories. That team and these people doing it, doing it on a weekly basis,
You could do great Spider-Man stories, but they lost a third of the character. That was the problem.
Well, yeah, but they could still get – I don't believe the heart of the character was gone when he was married. That's still my point.
But bold strokes of the move, regardless of what the move is itself, I think was the thing that set the stage for everybody to just be like, okay, now –
it's
now
different.
Take this momentum and take it and run with it. And if they'd been trying to keep those other balls in the air that had been going before, that was more of a shackle. That was more.
Well, the only ball in the air was the marriage. That was
it was everything that went with the marriage. It was the fact that he worked for Stark. It was the fact that he had.
They've been undoing that slowly but surely.
I thought
it was more about conflating it. It was more about starting over from scratch and saying all these things we saddled Peter with in the last 20 years.
I still think it could be here a year later and it would have been as good of a book. It would have been like, wow, Spider-Man's good again. That's what would have been the thing. But I do understand the change as catalyst, but I don't know. It was unnecessary and it was mean.
No.
Not real people. Once again.
One very strong candidate. I just want to preface this by saying I had three strong pickle candidates at the end. None of them made me as happy, but Day Tripper number three was right up there.
Oh, God damn it. It should be criminal. It's not even fair how good this comic is.
Criminal didn't come out this week?
Josh, what did you think of Day Tripper?
I thought that when you picked this is one of the best covers of the week. I think you were dead on. I don't think I even noticed the cover until I looked at your review of it. And I went back and it was like, wow, that really is spectacular. I thought this was probably my favorite of the issues. And then the other side of things is that I kind of get where we're going now.
Yep.
Whereas the other two, I wasn't really sure. It's just sort of different versions of this guy's life.
So where do you think this is ultimately going?
I don't know what the ultimate.
See, I can't decide if the deaths are metaphors.
I think it's about different choices now.
Yep, I agree. Yeah.
And I love that because there's small stories about choices in this guy's life, and you know he doesn't do the thing that he wants to do. He makes excuses. He takes the easier road. He breaks up with this girl, and I love the purity of the moment when he sees the girl in the supermarket.
Oh, don't even get me started. Well,
let me explain why this was almost the pick. First of all, he's been dying in every issue, and I want to put that aside for now because that sort of overshadows what's really going on in the book. To me, what the strength of this book, besides the art, which is fantastic, is that they are so good at capturing an emotional moment.
Yep.
That
the first issue was the early 30s questioning everything. Where's my life? Am I happy? Am I made the right decisions? Am I doing what I want to be doing? They perfectly captured that. The second issue was I'm 21. I'm on vacation. I meet a hot girl.
Yep.
There's passion and there's no responsibility. They captured that perfectly. And this issue was you come out of a long-term relationship. You're depressed. You think your life isn't over.
Had to move on.
And then you spot a girl and she smiles at you and you have that moment of clarity where you realize everything's going to be okay. And they captured that perfectly.
The panel where he catches her eye. You haven't seen her yet. Actually, you do sort of see her head in the previous panel, but you're not looking for it.
Yeah.
Which is also a telling bit of a neat bit of storytelling, really.
Yep.
Because she's there and you don't see.
She's there. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But that one panel, that thing catching the corner of his eye and his, I don't know how they did it, but you know exactly what happened there. Yep. You know, art wise, I really liked that.
I've had that moment and they perfectly captured the entire sea change in your emotional state.
They captured that moment with the thing, but they captured the breakup effectively. Like this issue was an emotional, like, you know, it was painful, but in a good way.
Was this the same girl?
No.
As the one from the last issue? Because it made it sound like he met her somewhere and she followed him.
Oh, the girl he broke up with. Yeah, that's what I thought.
She was the girl from the second issue.
The one who at the end of the second issue turned into a witch and killed him.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so she didn't do that.
Well, not in this version.
In this story,
These are alternate 1985s.
Well, I was just gonna say this is Doc Brown's time travel theory, which is I'm fine with, which is that you have a choice, and for every choice, there's a timeline that happens. And in this particular story, he decided to go back and tell the girl, you know, to go chase after the girl, where probably in real life he kept on walking.
Yeah, the title even becomes clear. Why is it called Day Trippers? Well, these are different trips.
Yep, exactly.
These are different little, you know. Well, no.
That was my only thing that killed me was that I felt the first two issues really did tell a day in this guy's life, and this one had a year later jump.
I think the day is more of a metaphor.
Yeah,
I think fair enough. Specifically, I don't. Then they weren't a day. I mean, the other one, That was a couple.
The first one was a day. The second one was
issue two.
Yeah,
it was a few days.
Yeah,
because it was overnight.
Yeah, it's a nitpick, but
I think with each issue we're finding what the actual structure is.
Yeah.
You know, the first issue we thought it would be a day, but then it's a day. It's more of a metaphor. I don't know. I'm trying to decide if in the end we're going to understand or not, if it's not important. I think it's not important.
I think the term day tripper isn't really about, it's not about the day. It's about little trips, little short trips.
Right.
That takes
in
you
a day,
place or
in
don't.
One day.
That's not the point. It's actually exactly opposite of what I'm trying to say. So you can keep going back to it, but I'm not going to agree with it. Let's talk about Ultimate Spider-Man number 7.
Oh, okay. Well, then switching gears.
Are we done? I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I was going to say how much I'm in love with the girl, but whatever.
Oh, I know. Me too. I mean, yeah, totally. I was like, oh, God, kill me.
You're saving me from embarrassment, so let's move on.
That's probably best. Ultimate Spider-Man number 7 is the one that I would have made pick of the week. I enjoyed the hell out of this one. I just I laughed a bunch of times as I was going through it. I love the real world aspect. You just put all these people in the house and they're just like, well, what do we do now? I don't know. And it was
like the easiest writer's thing in the world. Put all these characters together in a room and they're going to bounce off each other.
It totally is. And that's exactly what he's doing. And this is, for me, this is Bendis absolutely playing to his strengths.
Yep.
You know, it was just fun to read, and it was totally like, it wasn't like I was like, oh, this is such a challenging story for him to do and whatever, but it didn't matter. I was having so much fun reading it that it was good.
You know, the reason,
go ahead.
I was kind of disappointed for one very small reason, and that was because the artist whose name I'm going to butcher,
Takeshi Miyazawa,
he drew Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, and I loved Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, and I love the art in that. And so I was expecting to open this up to find the same art style, and he altered his art style just a bit to be more in line with
La Fuente,
La Fuente. And so when I didn't get what I was expecting, granted, that's my hang-up, not the book's hang-up. I was expecting the style of which he drew Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, and then I didn't get that. I was disappointed. So the whole issue, I was disappointed. And every time there would be inklings of the old style, I would go, oh, man, I wish it was done in that style.
But that's not to say that – I mean, I love the art.
But the art was great. Yeah. It's just like somebody puts a drink in front of you, and you drink it expecting it to be one thing, and it's actually another thing, which you may like, but you were expecting the other thing.
It's always about the drinking with you. But I was worried because there was no La Fuente, and you know how much I'm loving it, and I was afraid that it would change the tone of the book. But I thought, again, going back to – you know, like with Amazing Spider-Man, having, you know, a complimentary style kept the flow of the book, you know, natural, and the gaps that we're going to see because La Fuente can't do a monthly book. You know, he can only do like 8 issues a year or something like that. I'm fine with that if they have Miyazawa or somebody like that, so it has a consistent look and feel.
I didn't notice. I was a few pages in and I was like, oh, wait, this isn't La Fuente. Like, it didn't occur to me because it felt
he did
same.
A good job of altering his style to make it more in line with
the Detroit scene was hysterical.
So, you know, in addition to just the moments of the book, which I found fun and interesting. I really liked the plot. I liked that it tied back into that other thing from was Ultimate Origin, I think. You know, and I really like Johnny Storm with Spider-Man. It's always been one of my really fun team ups.
Well, there's that shot when the three of them are on the roof and you got Spider-Man, Iceman, and Human Torch, and there's Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let me ask you this: what's Rick Jones? Is he being a version of some other character?
Not as far as I can tell.
Is it new?
Because he's becoming a herald
of
so
Galactus.
He's like, is he Fire Lord
or
is
Nova? Sure? Maybe
something like that.
Yeah, not the Nova we like. The other girl Nova.
It was fun. I think it's gonna like if it's a big sort of cosmic story that put all these you know superhero friends together.
Yep.
You know, I think that could be a lot of fun. It was good stuff.
And I'm totally fine with these guys living together for like a year.
Oh, like keep it going. Yeah. No reason not to. Just keep that dog out.
They play each other really well.
Yeah. So my pick of the week, not surprisingly, was the last issue of Phonogram, the Singles Club, issue number 7. Mm-hmm. And my prediction was that Connor was going to be disappointed.
No, I wasn't. Actually,
oh, really?
I really liked the fact that it was a mostly silent issue. It was all done through the art, the storytelling.
Yeah.
I think in the end, I don't know. I think I'd have to read them all over again to really understand the whole overall art plot.
Yeah.
You know, I think in terms of moments and scenes, it was really good. And I think I'm assuming it's really about the magic in music.
Yep.
Is what I'm assuming. That's what the whole storyline is. I think I need to read it all over again. But no, I wasn't disappointed because after the last couple issues, realizing that it wasn't going the way I thought it was going, I was able to reconcile that for this final issue.
Yeah, I mean the thing about it is that we're always trained to look for like a thread or something to tie things together, and these really were just like and they really just are. you know, a bunch of people out for a night, and then where, how they're all their lives crisscross intersect and that sort of thing. And there was no kind of consistent thread other than that they all went to this club at some point. And I love that how it's, it ended where it started in Penny's bedroom. And if anything, the art just continued to get better and better and better with this whole series. This was probably the strongest issue of them all. Like, I thought that, you know, McKelvey really flexed his muscles in terms of, you know, drawing, you know, different kind of layouts and different kind of characters doing different kind of things, you know, whereas the previous issues was a lot of people standing around talking and dancing, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I loved it. It's just, you know, it's the last one and it might be the last phonogram we ever see. And when this comes out in trade, if you didn't read in issues, you know, seriously pick it up. And it would just be like, it just shows what independent comic publishing can do in my mind. And like, it's just an example of, you know, a couple of guys hitting, you know, two creators working together, hitting a stride and then doing something amazing. And this leaps and bounds better than the first series as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
And Matt Wilson's colors was a huge part of that too.
Color, the art was better, the coloring was better. I thought the story was more accessible.
Yep.
I think anybody judging the second series off the first series need to understand it's not like that at all. I didn't find the first series very accessible at all, but I thought this was really good.
Yeah, it was great. It was just so much fun. So I loved it.
You got the last month, Unwritten was the book of the month.
Yep.
And the big turning point in that whole thing is issue number 5, the Rudyard Kipling issue. This issue that just came out this past week, number 10, it was another one of those.
Oh, awesome. Yeah? Who was the writer?
The writer's Mike Carey. He does.
No, who did it focus on?
Joseph Goebbels.
No way, really?
Oh, yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah.
Awkward.
It really, like the beginning of the book, the characters have just some big stuff went down at the end of last issue, and they had all sort of escaped the prison, and they find themselves in basically this sort of ghostly half, just sort of like ethereal version of Stuttgart in 1940. There's Nazi flags everywhere, and they go into a film screening, being led by Joseph Goebbels, and no one can see them. They're like ghosts, except for Goebbels sees them. And they have a long conversation, and it's just, it's the bounds of sort of where they're going, and the complete limitlessness of what can be done with this story are come through every once in a while, and just like, wow, this can just be anything. And it is starting to feel a little bit like the threads are coming together some, so that you can start to sense. I think if this is anything like how Lucifer was structured. Like, you kind of don't know what's happening for a little while, and then at some point, like a third of the way through, you sort of get it from an overall, and then then you really,
like a Neal Stephenson novel.
Yeah, you start the journey at that point, because the first act you spend sort of like fumbling around in the darkness trying to figure out what it is, but there's enough cool ideas and there's enough stuff going on that's okay. From another standpoint, I just thought the art team all together on this one really came together, because you had these ghostly ethereal characters. So the color palette was a little off, except for the main characters who were actually real and they were colored normally. But there's a lot of gray and just very subtle tones and things like that. And just some really interesting concepts, just a lot of thinking. There was a lot of German in this. It's one of those books where there's like a lot of German and there's no translations for it. So you kind of have to glean context from it. And there was a letter about this one time, and I really like that. I find that a really interesting thing that you can do in comics, the same way that you can do in films. You know, if you have a film and you put somebody speaking a foreign language, you're making a conscious choice not to subtitle that. Yep. You're doing it for a reason. Sure, there's going to be some people who speak German and it's not going to mean the same thing, but there's others who aren't, and you kind of have to, you know, like. That builds the experience for you in a certain way, and I like that. It's a bold choice anyway. Really like this. There's definitely consequences from the stuff that happened before. It was really a great issue with a fantastic cover, again, obviously. But
was Goebbels on the cover?
Yep. Yes, he was. But
did you read that in the subway?
You don't? No. No, I did not. No. You got to watch that.
Yeah, it's worse than boobs. Not just Trump boobs.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. I can argue with that.
Well, what a perfect time to talk about the first convention of 2010.
That's why I like to read The Dark Knight, because it's got both.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It does. It wins. Yeah. It trumps everything.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Emerald City Comic Con is in Seattle, Washington, and it's March 13th and 14th, and Ron and I will be there. along with some great dealers who buy comics and collectibles. The Emerald City Comic Con always has a ton of great guests. This year is no different. Comics creators like Mike Allred, Brian Azzarello, Ed Brubaker, Joe Casey, Kieran Gillen, Jamie McKelvey, Jeff Johns, Alex Maleev, Terry Moore, Joe Quesada, Rick Remender, Greg Rucka, Chris Samney, and that's just a small sampling of all the comics creators that will be there in Seattle. We've got some awesome movie and TV stars that will also be there, like Leonard Nimoy, Will Wheaton, Felicia Day, and yes, Stan Lee will be there, and now is your chance to meet Stan Lee. Go to EmeraldCityComicCon.com. That's Emerald City, C-O-M-I-C-O-N, and you can see all the guests that will be there. You can buy advance tickets. It's March 13th and 14th in Seattle, and if you're in the area, you don't want to miss it. It's a really fantastic con, and that's just a small sampling of guests I read. They have tons of people at that con, tons.
Can I tell you what just made me very uncomfortable?
What?
That you two are going to be up there with Joe Casey.
Oh, that's it's a
flash story time.
It just means that people are going to be talking shit about me across the country, like hard, and I'm going to be like ugh.
We're all with camera.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, great. Fantastic.
Actually, instead of doing a regular con show, we might just record Joe Casey telling Josh stories.
I think we might need to do that. Actually, there's a segment for enough.
There's a segment.
Yeah. I don't know how many stories he had. Listen, I'm going to be.
We could sit around and we could clock wipe between them.
I'm gonna be a week or two into daddyhood at that point anyway. I won't know. You could be calling me, be like, and this happened. I'd be like, who are you,
Uncle Leo?
Hello?
We should leave with bachelor stories.
good times.
So check it out, EmeraldCityComicCon.com. Emerald City, C-O-M-I-C-O-N. They got everything, all the guests there, and Ron and I'll be there.
Yep.
So say hi if you see us.
I'm gonna guess that Connor put Batgirl number 7 on this list.
Yes, I got done with the copy and decided I took a mental break. Batgirl number 7.
you made a noise when you did it too. Apparently, the sound of Connor checking out is
Batgirl number 7 was the third book that was almost pick of the week. Batgirl is on the same level as Power Girl. If you're not reading Batgirl, you're missing out. It's another one of those super fun comics that are. Not and Batgirl is tied into the greater Bat world, but she's not. You know, she's mostly on her own, and she's telling her own story. She's a very unique character. It's sort of she's a very spunky sort of college age, you know, teen hero. And she's in this issue, she's dealing with Damian, and she's dealing with Dick Grayson, Batman, and Oracle. And it's, she's determined to make it on her own, no matter what obstacles are getting in her way. And it's just she's a very appealing character. And next issue is. The Red Robin crossover. For anyone who's reading Red Robin, not Batgirl, you should jump on there. But this is fantastic, and it's quietly one of the better Batman books. You know, it doesn't get the same hoopla that Detective gets or that Batman and Robin gets, but this is definitely maybe the third best Batman book, which was shocking when they were all announced. I wouldn't have expected that, but it is true.
Cool.
And what does Damian call her? A dreadful shrew. The dreadful shrew is holding me back.
I like that kid.
Yeah, he's fun.
DMZ number 50 came out this week to continue the month of Brian Wood here in February. And if you didn't hear the interview, the Talksplode that I did with Brian Wood a couple weeks ago, go back on the feed or go to ifanboy.com to listen to hear him talk about this issue. But wow, talk about a 50th issue.
Keep it cool, Hotshot.
Well, the great thing is that it's spoiler free. There's nothing to spoil. What he did for this 50th issue, it's called Notes from the Underground, and it's an anthology issue with a bunch of little short stories that are all just kind of snapshots of the world of DMZ. And because, you know, as Brian said in the interview, there are so many like questions that, you know, the world that he created with DMZ, like, well, what's going on here? What is this? Who's doing this? And he's not going to cover it all in the book. So it's great to see little kind of moments. There's a story by Ryan Kelly, the art by Ryan Kelly, about the guy who's taking care of all the art in New York City. Like one guy like went into all the museums and gathered them and is just keeping them safe until this all calms down. That was just – it was amazing. There's a awesome silent story by drawn by Fabio Moon. Great black and white story by Riccardo Burchielli. I can't pronounce
it. Well, the great thing about DMZ is he has created this entire universe. Yep. He really hasn't explored. And so there's a lot of fertile ground for stories.
So if all you know is the concept that you know, there was a civil war and now New York City is a DMZ and you like kind of like alternate present or slight future kind of stories, pick up this one issue. See if you like the tone of it. Then go back and get volume one because this is a great sampler to DMZ. Like great idea for the 50th issue. No impact on the previous storyline. No impact. impact on the next storyline. Just great little moments and some great pin-up, not even pin-ups. What he did that same kind of thing that they did with Transmet, where instead of a pin-up, he also included like a paragraph of text to go with the character that's about it. So you're getting more than just the drawing, but you get, you know, Dave Gibbons, Eduardo Risso, Jim Lee, like some great stuff. So I mean, it was just – it totally – and I had a preview of it when I did the interview with him. That was all – he sent me a black and white preview. Seeing it in color just came – it just looks so much better. Like the Dave Gibbons one, he did that spray – that graffiti artist, and it just looks so cool. Like really good. Good Dave Gibbons piece. So.
I really like DMZ. It doesn't get as much play as it should.
50 issues.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Yeah,
that really is. That's no small thing, at all. And you know, it's a good book. I think. I mean, for me, I mean that's
it's a good book that Josh enjoys whenever he comes over to my house and reads my copy.
that's fair.
I don't own the first few at this point. What's the point?
Is GMC out yet? Can I come borrow it?
I'm like a year and a half behind too. so clearly, I can't wait to get my paws on it.
I think you forgot to pick up the newest one. You came over last week.
I think I'm at least two back.
It's really good. It's kept good. It up. It's really good. Excellent. DMZ is a book we'll talk about at some point in the future, I think, when it's all said and done.
Yep.
Vengeance of Moon Knight number 5. Connor IM'd me specifically and said, make sure you check that out, dude. And it's a good thing he did, because, geez, Jerome Opeña.
He's fantastic.
He's just superb.
Well, this series was the first issue was my pick of the week. I really liked it. The second issue I didn't like very much at all. I had the Sentry in it. He just stood around, didn't do anything like he normally does. And it really delved deep into the mythology, and I don't really know the Moon Knight mythology, so I didn't really connect with it. But slowly with each issue, it's gotten more accessible. And I thought this was the best issue since the first issue, mostly because of the art, but I also really like the end scene with Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was fun. If I'm being completely honest, I spent most of this issue just kind of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, if you haven't been reading the last couple issues, you wouldn't.
Yeah, really, and I just, you know, I kind of don't really care about the story too much, but I like the end. I like the attitude that they're giving him. I don't want to read a crazy Moon Knight. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have
that's what Moon Knight is. It's always been crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, the idea that, like, he's at least holding it together enough to be cogent most of the time, I'm okay with. I think a crazy character works very well in the context of other characters around, but when it's just about them, I lose interest. One question, how strong is Moon Knight supposed to be? Because
I don't know, but so what happens at the end of this issue is the guy who's fighting shoots a rocket to a building, the building starts to collapse, and he holds it up using his carbonadium joints in his suit. So apparently he's not really holding up, his suit is.
Well, still.
I don't know how that works. I didn't really understand that. It was a little bit wonky to me, but the end was great when Spider-Man shows up and starts to lecture him about being a hero with ethics and a code, and Moonlight just sort of flies away and goes, how's that working out for you? And he pulls back to a banner featuring the Avengers with the Dark Avengers, you know, protecting the city.
You know, it was a really awesome little detail in that, the page before that. Spider-Man swings in, and you see the creases in his costume.
Yeah,
and just the folds of his little costume. And I just thought, oh, no one does that. That's really neat.
Opeña's fantastic. The downside is apparently in issue 7 or 8, somebody else is drawing. So I think as soon as he's off, I'm going to follow. But
is there any chance that he's leaving it to go do a Hawkeye book? Because
yes,
I want that. That's what I thought as I was reading this. I go, he'd do an awesome Hawkeye book. By the way, apropos of nothing, the preview for that X Factor Forever thing after this.
Yeah,
I love that art.
It looks awesome. It's Dan Panosian. It's Dan freaking Panosian.
I don't know who that is, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. Yeah, I'm so excited for that. Oh, it's gonna be great.
Sorry,
They're back on ship. Weezy's back. Weezy's back.
I don't know. I literally don't know what you're talking about.
Their base was a ship. It was the spaceship. It was this old anyway. Apocalypse's spaceship.
Wait a minute. You're saying the carrier from the Authority was bullshit?
Yeah, pretty much.
let's talk about BPRD King of Fear number 2. This was only a two issue story in the BPRD thing. And this is, I don't know if I really have anything else to say about it other than every single time one of these comes out, I'm just stunned at the economy and quality of storytelling that Arcudi and Guy Davis do together. I mean, these pages, every one of these pages is like a masterclass in how to do storytelling and tone, and the Guy Davis art is so subtly overwhelming. It's so good, and if you're not paying attention, you won't even notice it. But every page is It's just a wonderful work of art, and I really love this book.
Davis draw a Hawkeye book?
I don't know if it would be right. I think he would storytell the hell out of it, but I don't think that that's exactly his tone. I don't think.
Could he do a book called Ronin, Son of Hawkman?
That doesn't even make sense.
But it sounds like you'd buy it.
I would buy that. That's crazy. That would really screw up Hawkman continuity.
Big time. Dark X-Men number 4. Not much to say on this other than Paul Cornell, Leonard Kirk. I miss Captain Britain. I want Paul Cornell and Leonard Kirk to be on Uncanny X-Men. There, I said it. Because I couldn't care less about these characters or this contrived story, but it just looks and reads awesome.
Again, I forgot you talked.
It's Mystique, Dark Beast, Mimic, Omega, now Nate Gray, but an Norman and stuff like that. I couldn't care less about the story. I mean, but Paul's writing the hell out of it, and Leonard's drawing the hell out of it, and it's just, I love it. So
one of the best things about Reign of Terror ending, Dark Reign ending, was will be all these dark, you know, books go away.
Gone away, exactly. So, cool. So that was all the comics we read this week, or the ones that we felt deemed necessary to talk about. But you, the iFan base, the community, felt the other books deserved to be talked about, including New Mutants number 10, which was reviewed by Wood Mania, who gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5. And at this the time of this recording, 4.4% of you made it your pick of the week. And this is Wood Mania's entire review, and said, "For the first time since House of M, we have a Cyclops sighting, and it's not in an X-Men book." I don't know about that. "I have not been a fan of the character's turn towards defending the mutant race, as if homo superior life is more valuable to him than homo sapien. Here we finally see Cyclops look beyond the here and now and look at the big picture of what it means to be an X-Man. He showed more character in this one issue than he has in the last decade. Also, I admit the references back to the Liefeld issue of X-Force brought a smile to my face." I don't agree with everything Wood Mania said. He or she kind of glossed over the majority of the book, which was the New Mutants.
Cyclops the draw for this? Everybody is talking about how excited they were for Cyclops.
Well, yeah, Cyclops is on the cover, and Cyclops is in maybe 4 or 5 pages of it. Basically, what happens is that the old New Mutants team, Cannonball, Sunspot, you know, Moonstar, that whole team, they get dispatched by Cyclops to Japan to deal with Sauron and some of the Savage Land mutates who left the Savage Land to go to Utopia, and they caused
Middle Earth.
Yeah, they caused some trouble. And so the New Mutants go there, and meanwhile, back in Utopia, Cyclops is watching the fight, and Emma picks up on the fact that he's watching them because he's trying to find the next leader of the X-Men, and it's assumed that it'll be Cannonball, but then towards the end, he's like, "Oh, maybe it won't be Cannonball." But it was just a great issue. Zeb Wells is right. This is New Mutants has been quietly one of the books that, like, is kind of like, if you're an X-Men fan or, you know, casual X-Men fan, you should be reading this book because it's really good.
Wasn't the Cyclops in our X-Force?
Yeah, he was. Cyclops has appeared in other books than Uncanny. Okay. So New Mutants, sorry Wood Mania, but New Mutants is an X-Men book, but they all have X's on their belts, so deal with it. But
he was pretty cool in Astonishing X-Men.
Yeah, he was. But that was an X-Men book. But anyway.
I know, but he said he hasn't been good in anything.
Yeah, no, he's been great. I mean, there have been moments. Cyclops is a great character, as always has been, so F you. But the art.
Wait, you meaning me?
You, yeah, you. No, everybody. All of you. All you are the ones who don't like Cyclops. The art was split by Paul Davidson and David Lopez and Alvaro Lopez. So you had three artists on the book. And what they did was the scenes of New Mutants was by Paul Davidson, and the scenes of Cyclops were done by David and Alvaro Lopez. And art was great. I thought I loved the art in this book. The art in this book has been consistently good. Love New Mutants.
Cubman987 wrote in about Batman and Robin number 8, gave the story a low 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And pick of the week percentage at the time of recording is 5.7%. That rounds up to 6. He says, "This was an odd issue for me, just that it was not up to the usual standards. I thought that Stewart's art was really good and enjoyed it quite a bit, as well as the Quitely cover. The story, however, just wasn't there for me this week. I think my main problem with this story, other than it being kind of weird, is the overall lack of depth. I mean, I understand what's going on, but the story is a little choppy, a little rushed, and I'm not sure how the cult aspect of the story makes a whole lot of sense. Maybe it will be explained better next issue, as Batwoman's presence in the story is explained in this issue."
It's interesting that he said it lacked depth, because what I see online, people complaining that there's too much. There's too much. You have to know too much, which is sort of the opposite. But I really like this. I liked the storytelling technique was one that's used all over the place, and half of the West Wing was drop you in the middle of the story and then flash you back to how you got there, and this is what he's been doing here. in the story of Dick's misguided attempt to resurrect Bruce with a Lazarus pit.
I know what you're saying.
It wasn't actually Bruce who was dead.
I understand what he's saying, and I don't necessarily agree with him because it's whether you like it or not. You know, you can like it or a little bit. I got a little confused in the middle of this one. I went back and tracked my way through it, and I figured it out, and it made sense because the Batman who was flying back was the zombie
crazy
Batman,
fake Batman
or whatever. Yeah.
So it's like crazy fake Captain America?
Well, what we find out here was that we flash back to Final Crisis to reveal that when Darkseid was trying to clone Batman in Final Crisis, but they couldn't because he was too crazy, if you recall.
Yep.
Darkseid switched out his body with a fake clone body. So the body that Superman carried out at the end of Final Crisis was a clone. The body that the return of Alfred and Batman was a clone. The body that Dick Grayson brings to the Lazarus Pit's a clone. So they resurrect a clone Batman who was crazy to begin with, but crazier for coming out of the Lazarus Pit. Mm-hmm. So that's how you rectify how is Batman in the past and also in the present, is that the clone, it was a clone body in the present.
I liked the ideas in this one a lot. I really liked the clone Batman and the craziness and everything. I don't know if I think the execution was 100% there. I think there were parts where it probably could have been stronger. And everybody's into the Cameron Stewart art. I don't love it. I don't think it's bad.
I thought the Cameron Stewart art was almost thicker this issue, if that makes sense, like the inking. Mm-hmm. I know, and Cameron's doing his own inks, like he's just listed as the artist, but I felt like the last issue was a little cleaner and this one felt a little heavier.
Mm-hmm. There's a thick line around a lot.
Yeah. But that's the thing is like I said last issue, like I don't care about the story at all. I was just looking for the art, and I really do like Cameron Stewart. I like what he did with this. I'll tell you what threw me for a loop is that I got to the end of the story, and that first wave, I thought that was just an ad. I missed that it was a sneak preview, and I turned the page, and I'm like, oh, this is a different style. And I started reading it, and because it's kind of this could be a Batman story. This Brian
has
been
in
there.
Yeah,
I know
that exactly. That art looks great, by the way.
Yeah, and then it confused the hell. I'm like, what is the spirit doing in this book? It confused the hell out of me. It was
that's awesome. Yeah, no, I don't know. It's like these books I like, and then I don't, and then I do, and then they really – you got to judge them at the end, I think, a little bit. But I do feel like we got spoiled, you know. Issue number two was the greatest issue I've read, and I don't remember how long.
Well, the first arc was fantastic. My favorite part was the Dick Van Dyke's Chimney Sweep Gang.
Yeah, that was
I think you can't go wrong with Chimney Sweep Gangs.
Yeah, although the masks reminded me of that Punisher Ennis.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm here to clean your chimney.
No.
No. I'm here to order comic books online.
Go to DCBS where you can get monthly specials of up to 75% off, 40% off all major publishers, and flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders. You can buy anything that is listed in the previews catalog, and there are many, many thousands of trade paperbacks in stock. You can track your orders online, and you can go to DCBService.com to order. Somebody actually wrote in this week and wondered, they're a soldier and they're stationed overseas and they wanted to know how they could get comics, and I checked, and DCB and in stock do ship to APO addresses.
Awesome.
Not those same shipping rates, but they can get you stuff. So if you're stationed overseas and you want your fix of comics, you're getting a good discount on them. That's one way that you can do it. So they'll take care of you. Make sure you check out the Summit City Comic-Con. That is going to be on May 22nd in Fort Wayne, Indiana. If you're in the middle of the country somewhere and you think, I'd like to go to a cool little one-day show, then that's the place you want to go. Go to SummitCityComicCon.com for more information on that. They'll have everything you want. There's a bunch of artists and stuff going to be there, and I'm sure they're going to have some exceptionally good deals on buying comics. I'm guessing. It's just a thought. So thanks to DCBService.com for sponsoring the show.
All right. Well, it's the time of the month where we are 1 week late talking about the NAM.
Time of the
month.
Had, we, 1 week we, late. There you go.
Nice. That's a good. Those are words you want to hear strung together.
Man, I've had those. That's rough. A lot of stress.
You have.
Yeah. Well, when it's me, it's a lot more stressful than when it's you.
Yeah. I'm not prepared for this.
I just met you. Book of the month.
Oh, and we just went way inside.
Yeah.
The NAM Volume 1 was the iFanboy Book of the Month for February. It is from Marvel Comics, and writer Doug Murray, artist Michael Golden with Wayne Van Zandt, who did one of the issues. This was the incredible release from Marvel Comics that happened in the late 80s, 86, I believe, Josh. It was 86.
86, correct. Yep.
And this was the true story of the Vietnam War. And if the idea that Marvel put a book out chronicling a realistic take on the Vietnam War in 1986 blows your mind, then you're normal, because it should blow your mind. The fact that this came out in 1986, less than 10 years after the war ended.
Very risky.
And not like it was an imprint book. It wasn't coming out from Epic or any of these other imprints at the time. It was coming out from Marvel Comics,
and it's in continuity too.
Well, at the end, it went for 7 years and 70 or 80 issues, and by the end they were really struggling for sales, so they brought the Punisher in, which really sort
just
of
brought it into 616, baby.
Ruined the whole point of the book, which
you're how proud of that, Ron is. He's talking like a Giants fan. He's like, 616, baby, that's how we do it.
The NAM is a fantastic real life on the ground tale, and it's written by a Vietnam vet. Larry Hama was the editor. He's a Vietnam vet, and the one thing they really wanted to do was to tell a true story. They didn't want to Hollywood it up. They didn't want to glam it up. They didn't want to tell anything unrealistic. They did a lot of research. A lot of the stories are based on real, if not real events, inspired by real events, real missions, real recon, real things that happen. And a lot of it isn't. Not a lot of running around and shooting and a lot of heroic events. A lot of it's just survival. And really, that's what I found at the end of the day. The NAM was about survival. And that was the really compelling thing, was because, you know, you're dealing with a bunch of guys in uniforms. So the course of these 10 issues, you really get to know them, and some of them don't make it to the end. And I think they did a really good job of creating the atmosphere of the war, the confusion of the battlefield, the growth of a character that we follow. The one character whose name I'm blanking on.
Marks.
Is it
Ed Marks?
Marks, yeah.
Marks. The first issue, the first page is him flying off to war, and it's the structure of the story was every issue was a month. So after 10 issues, we've been in the war for 10 months. So yeah. Marks has been in the war for 10 months by the end, and you go from a wide-eyed, not naive, but new grunt on the field to a sort of a veteran of the war by the end. And it's a subtle growth, and it's not like it opens overnight. Eventually you just get to the point where he is a veteran now, and he's not so green, as it were. And it worked on so many levels.
Well, what I found interesting about it was that it was purely, like you said, experiential and survival based. There was no judgment on the war. Why are they there? What are they fighting for? It was just like, listen, these guys either got joined or drafted. They're in the shit, and this is what they're dealing with. And this is what, you know, this is what the experience was like. And that's what I think is amazing. And then on the art side too, is, you know, with Michael Golden art, who's a name who I think now you hear thrown about and you don't understand why. This is an example of why Michael Golden deserves respect.
And his style is very unique. It's very it's half cartoony, half super realistic. And I think it works in that if you're trying to capture an atmosphere, there's not much more of an exaggerated atmosphere that I would imagine than war. You know, you go from normal to chaos, and it's life and death chaos. So the fact that occasionally faces are exaggerated, or poses are exaggerated, I think it's fine, because in the reality, I think your reality is exaggerated in that instance. I think so. I like the art a lot for this.
I thought it was perfect. I mean, it really, I've read little bits of this in the past, but never in order, never from the beginning. And I think that once I did it in that way, it really clicked for me, and I got it. Because when I read it before, I was like, "What is this?" It just didn't hold up to what I had heard about it. But you know, the point that you make about Marks is that you don't realize that he's because it's not a straight line. It skips a month. The whole thing takes place in real time, and you get to him later, and he's a different character. And it takes you a second to realize that you are looking at the same character.
Right.
But he's changed so drastically in a month, and not in a way that's bad storytelling. In fact, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Really, really great. I also learned, we've had this conversation a lot about the worst thing that you would want to be in a wartime situation. It's come up, tankies, that's come up. You don't want to be in the tank, or you don't want to be the ball turret gunner in a B-17.
Yep.
I don't ever want to be a tunnel rat.
God, no.
No. I learned a lot in this book. You know, like...
Yeah. There's a lot of it is in the beginning... You know, Marx is going through the war, so he's our vessel into the war, explaining tactics and why the guy, the scout, walks way ahead, and why he never gets attacked by the Viet Cong, and what the Tunnel Rat does, and how he got the name, and the history of the war in one issue. And so he's our vessel into learning, and there's a lot of history and military stuff going on. So it works on lots of levels.
Totally. And I did learn that if you're going to read this book, you need to listen to Fortunate Son in the background while you're reading it.
Bing,
so that's what it, yeah. It ain't me.
I prefer Buffalo Springfield.
Well, yeah, that one can work too. Maybe a good mix, a good late 60s mix.
I just listened to
I ain't no fortunate son.
That's really the worst thing I've ever heard. I just listen to the Fixin' the Die Rag over and over again. And I see that little ball bouncing.
Some people fall.
I don't even know the lyrics. you can read my review on iFanboy.com. We're going to find a way to work this into the video show. We all really liked it, so I think we're going to find a way to put it in. So if you haven't heard enough about this, you'll be able to find more about it soon, I think. But check it out. InStock Trades has it for 37% off, $18.89.
That's crazy.
So inclined. It's a big, thick trade. It's 10 issues, plus a really good introduction by Larry Hama telling you the history of the book and how it came to be, which is fascinating in and of itself. So check it out. The NAMM Volume 1, iFanboys, February. Book of the month.
How about that Larry Hama? He's like the Stan Lee of the 80s.
He really is very important.
Really important. Anyway, so I want to remind you about C2E2. It's coming to Chicago for the first time in two decades. A major National Comics and Entertainment Convention is coming to downtown Chicago. You're going to want to make your plans now. It's coming on April 16th through April 18th, where thousands of fans and creators and celebrities are going to come to enjoy the con in the Windy City. They got a ton of special guests this year, including Alex Ross, Jeff Smith, Jeff Johns, Mike Mignola, Ethan Van Sciver, and tons of more of your favorite creators. So you're going to want to check it out. The great thing about C2E2 is the price. If you want to go, it's $25 for one day pass, $50 for the entire weekend. That totally makes it affordable. So to get a full list of the guests and all the events that are going on and to buy tickets online, go to C2E2.com. That's C2E2.com. But wait, there is more. C2E2 and iFanboy, at iFanboy, we like to give things away. So we teamed up with the folks at C2E2, and we're giving away a chance to win tickets and tons of C2E2 merchandise before the con starts. So we're going to be giving away one amazing VIP package, three weekend passes, five exclusive C2E2 posters signed by Alex Ross, you know, the painty guy, you know, his work. And we're also giving away 15 limited edition C2E2 t-shirts. And the grand prize, the total, the one that you're going to be working for, is to win a lunch with an editor from Marvel. And we assume they're picking up the tab, we hope. So you entering the contest is super easy. Just go to C2E2/iFanboy, enter your name and your email address, and that's all it takes. You're entered from there. C2E2 and us, we're going to be drawing the winners for all the entries on March 19th. So do it by March 19th. So that's C2E2.com/iFanboy. And stay tuned, because we're planning the official after party. iFanboy is one of the sponsors of the official after party. And there's going to be great more ways to win tickets and other merchandise by following C2E2 on Twitter at C2E2.
And Ron and I will be there.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will be there as well.
I think you can win lunch with us.
Maybe.
When you pay.
Buy him lunch. I know you
can. Yeah, I will buy lunch. Let's get a couple of emails in here quick. We're running out of time, so we got some quick ones. Jackie from Queens, New York. Josh, what? His represent. Quick question is, Comic-Con season is coming, and I've done of money saved up. I probably think he means a ton. Yeah, let's start it over with the proper spelling.
Yeah.
Quick question. Comic-Con season is coming, and I have a ton of money saved up, and I plan on getting tons of trades. The question is, which of the following three trades should I get? Jeff Johns' entire run on The Flash, Jeff Johns' early run on the JSA, or Walt Simonson's Thor Visionaries? Which one should he get?
That's like, should I buy the entire Queen discography or Jessica Simpson? I was just trying to think of very different books.
Like, should I get this Beatles album or this Beatles album?
Right.
They're all good. I mean, like, I personally, I would say get The Flash, because I love that run. So that's, but I'm biased.
I think Josh will fix Thor Visionaries.
I'd go for the Thor stuff. That Walt Simonson stuff is long, goes for a long time. It's, you know, it's seminal, but I could see The Flash too. I think
Is it long, Josh?
So I'll pick the third one and say JSA. Yeah. Johns' JSA run. If you enjoy the current one, you will most likely also enjoy the original run. It's basically the same quality of writing, and he builds a lot of the stuff that the new second one is built on top of.
We're not giving any answers tonight, basically.
So basically, whoever you agree with most, you should go with that.
Flash. Nick from Minneapolis, Minnesota writes in with a strange request. Oh, I need help with my wedding. Oh no. Oh dear God!
We haven't had one of these in forever.
Nothing good can come of this. Okay, my lovely fiance has agreed to let several comic book related things slip into our wedding, mainly the Cyclops and Phoenix Mighty Mug cake toppers, and more importantly, a reading in the actual ceremony itself. I was hoping to find something appropriate from an old superhero wedding issue, but have come up empty handed so far. Is there anything you guys can think of that would work? My future wife and I would be eternally grateful. Okay, I got two thoughts here. Number one, how big is your cake? Those Mighty Mugs are huge.
They're very wide.
Yeah, they're very wide. How are you working that out? Anyway, number two, don't do a reading from a comic book at your wedding. I know it's cool and fun and everything, but there are no good comic book wedding issues to read from.
We all end up in a fight.
Exactly. Like, and you don't want to end up fighting your guests.
And they were mostly all written by salty, fat, white-haired men.
Yes, exactly. Who did have loyal wives, who did have very loyal and loving wives. But yeah, I know what you're doing, dude, and walk down the aisle to a good song or something. I don't know. It's
funny. I was watching the other night some of our old episodes and the love episode where we did all the relationship questions, and I was thinking this, and this email came in, and I was like, wow, that hasn't happened in a while.
It hasn't, yeah. So give us your relationship questions.
Maybe we should do another love show.
No, let's not do that. anyway, so yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you guys agree with me or
no? I agree with you. Like, there's certain things that like keep that. I don't know. It's like you see those people have the stormtrooper weddings, and I think back to my wedding, and I'm like, I'm glad I didn't do that. Well, wear your X-Men boxer shorts if you want to.
Exactly. It's all about subtle touches
on the outside. That was tucks.
that was awkward.
I think the main problem is I don't think there's any good source material for
this. I agree.
You know what we're
going to
do?
I think most superhero weddings don't end up with a big speech, although maybe the Spider-Man wedding, maybe the Fantastic Four wedding. But really, the whole point of the wedding is usually just to have a big fight.
Go subtle. Go subtle.
In our recessional, it changed at the last minute, but we were going to do the Superman theme during our recessional.
You chose the right one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but that didn't happen. Yeah. No, the recession because the bagpipe showed up.
Oh right, yeah.
Right.
I was talking about the introduction at the reception when you came into.
One of the Amelie theme and then the Princess Bride theme.
No, you came into the reception. It was the final countdown.
Oh yeah, because we were really into Arrested Development at the time.
See, and that's something you know maybe
you dated your wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
which is awkward because you were getting married and you're dating.
Well, what's
your wedding.
Funny is that we used the final countdown, and I find myself years later wondering if people thought that we just really liked Europe. We didn't.
Anyway,
but also your brother coming out the Top Gun theme was
pretty cool.
That was a good one. Wow, you remember a lot of that, Connor.
Which is funny because he was very drunk, Connor.
Not at that point.
Anyway. All right. So email us at contact@ifanboy.com with all your relationship and wedding planning questions. For a nominal fee, we will plan your wedding. So,
yes.
Yeah. So email us at contact@ifanboy.com. No voicemails this week because we did the book of the month. So we're going to get the voicemails back next week.
So really quickly, we still have a couple of Battle Pug shirts. I don't know for sure. I haven't done the final count, but there's still a couple left. The Fear Agent shirts are still for pre-order. We're going to be putting those in production, I think, in a couple of weeks. So get your Fear Order orders in. It's a Fear Agent original T-shirt by Jomo Pena.
The only Fear Agent shirt ever. Go to ifanboy.com/store. Order it now while you can. They're going quickly. So I know I say that all the time, but it's true. It's not just bullshit. So
you can make sure you listen to the Talksplode podcast. This last week, Ron spoke with Brian Wood, like we said. And Chris Niesman has been helping out and doing the Don't Miss shows. They come out on Mondays. They're great. I love listening to them. It's like I can listen to little short around comics, but it's on our site and I don't.
You know, it was bizarre. The first Chris Niesman show where he said he was with iFanboy, and I was like, that doesn't seem.
That threw
right.
me for a loop. Yeah, it was weird. But he talked to Phil Hester about The Anchor, which is a really cool series from Boom that the first trade came out collecting the first four issues this week with issue five, and you get the trade for like $9 and
fun,
then get,
it's fun episode too. It was really good. I've never heard Phil. Actually, no, I remember hearing Phil Hester at a con once, and just he was really funny and good. So
yeah, he's a good guy. And we got some giveaways.
Yeah, the Top Cow prize pack, the contents of which I don't remember off the top.
It's a lot. It's like 8 or 9 trades.
It's a bunch
some
of
cool
stuff.
Top Cow stuff.
Really
yeah.
good Wanted edition in there, I believe.
Yes.
In addition to some other really cool stuff. The winner is David Gammon.
David Gammon.
Gammon. Okay. I was trying to make too much of that H.
David has won Impaler Volume 1, Freshman Volume 1, Michael, The Art of Michael Turner, Wanted, The Assassin's Edition, Magdalena, Blood Divine, Pilot Season Volume 1, Strike Force Volume 1. I have them all right here. That's
very cool.
Impaler is really good.
And he won that because he is an iFanboy member, and you could become a member too at iFanboy.com/store, and that makes you eligible to win the remaining February giveaways, including next week we're giving away a Vertigo prize pack, which is awesome. It's got Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
I can read it out for you. I got them right here. Swamp Thing Volume 2, Shade the Changing Man's Volume 1 and 2, Air Volume 2, Sandman the Dream Hunters, the OGN. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 trades.
I believe that the Sandman and the Swamp Thing are hardcovers,
yes,
aren't they?
Yes, they are.
We're underselling that on the website. They are hardcovers, so that's pretty fucking cool.
Deluxe edition.
But then the ultimate giveaway at the end of the month, we're going to be giving away a signed copy of Choker Number 1, which may or may not went to stores this week.
Stores got it, and it was a disaster.
For Ben Templesmith and Ben McCool. And we're going to be giving away an original page, page number 2 from the Choker preview that appeared in Liberty Comics, number 2 from Image Comics. Original page of art from Ben Templesmith, which is not cheap, people. We're going to be giving that away to a lucky winner. And if you haven't checked out Choker yet, it's now definitely shipping on February 24th, the same week as we're doing this this giveaway. So make sure you become a member, become eligible, and go pick up Choker while you're at it. It's going to be awesome.
Make sure you go to ifanboy.com. You'll see all those things. There, those prize packs are listed. You can see pictures of them if that's what you need to put you over the edge. You'll also see a bunch more posts and fun things to talk about, stuff that we write about all week. Activity's been high. A lot of things going on. A lot of stuff to talk about. It's been good on the site lately, and you should come join the fun if you have not. We put more work into the site than anything else we do, probably. So if you're missing out on that, then you're missing out on most of iFanboy, and that would be a shame. You can go to ifanboy.com/about. You can see who we are and stalk us on the internet. So that's what those links are for.
Yeah, go to twitter.com/ifanboy. Follow us there.
That you can do, too. We have a video show that is also hosted at iFanboy. This last week was the what I titled The Grizzly Vault. Because everybody in the books were a little bit grisly. And next week, what we've said will be the last Strangers in Paradise show we ever do. No, we're talking about the work of Terry Moore in its entirety, spending some time on Strangers in Paradise and Echo. And good stuff coming up.
Hypothetically, it's coming out next week. So.
Oh, good. Wonderful. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. The voicemails will return next week. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, romance questions.
Yes.
We love
questions
those.
About your marriage. They're fun.
Yeah. And if you like what we do, go to iTunes, write a review for this show. But ultimately, go to write a review for iFanboy Don't Miss. I saw a bunch of you have written some reviews in there. Go subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss. Just search for iFanboy in iTunes. Subscribe to them all. Write reviews for them all. Oh, wow.
Did you get emotional?
I got choked up there. I got a little
bit. Did you just throw up?
Yeah. An air bubble happened. Anyway, so go to iTunes, write reviews, and tell your friends, tell your comic book store, tell anybody that likes comics about iFanboy. Help us spread the word. We really appreciate it.
Jesus, so. Ron's got the bends. You don't want that.
Oh, not at all. Ugh. Anyway, so all right. So I think that wraps up for this week. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Tom Caters. What does this script say? What the...
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.